The Dominican Republic and Haiti share this Caribbean island. But in more ways than one, they're distant neighbors. One speaks French, the other Spanish. But more importantly, Haitians suffer from acute poverty, extreme political instability, and now uncontrollable violence. On the other side of the border, in the capital Santo Domingo, life looks peaceful and prosperous. But looks are deceiving. There are two things people agree on: the fear that the violence next door could spill over into this country, and the desperate need for Haiti to restore law and order with the help of an international community that seems to have forgotten this island.
For the ninth time in less than 4 years, I come before this distinguished body of the United Nations to reiterate the Dominican Republic government's concern about the persistent and acute crisis affecting Haiti. The violence and political instability experienced in our neighboring nation have a devastating impact on the civilian population, Haitian democracy, and regional security.
I'm Lucia Newman in Santo Domingo. Concerns are worsening here in the capital of the Dominican Republic in the midst of a worsening security crisis in neighboring Haiti. Here on the ground, many fear the consequences of criminal gangs taking over much of the Haitian capital. The Dominican Republic is also confronting the human fallout of this crisis as it deports tens of thousands of undocumented Haitians across the border. So, what impact is the security crisis in Haiti having on this nation? And what steps will the Dominican government take to confront these challenges? In the next half hour, we delve deeper into these issues as the Foreign Minister of the Dominican Republic, Roberto Alvarez Gil, talks to Al Jazeera. Roberto Alvarez, Foreign Minister of the Dominican Republic, I'd like to start by reminding everyone that you have said that no country in the Western Hemisphere has the security problems of your neighbor, Haiti. So what does that mean for the Dominican Republic? Because you are the only country that is sharing the island of Hispaniola with Haiti.
Thank you for the invitation, Lucia. It's a pleasure to be with you and your audience. That is correct. Because of the fact that we share a relatively small island of maybe 90,000 square kilometers total, of which we have two-thirds in Haiti, one-third of the island, because we are obviously being an island surrounded with water and nowhere else for any Haitians wanting to leave their country to go immediately. So the adjacent country is a draw. In addition, because of our economy, which has been growing for the last 50 to 60 years at a 5% clip, more or less, that is also an attraction, a big magnet. So, given the current situation in Haiti, where there is law and order has basically broken down, so the only place that Haitians can flee to immediately is towards the Dominican Republic. That is why we have up to 10,000 of our armed forces members at the border. We have to take care of the fact, because there is no interlocutor on the other side, of the fact that thousands of criminals were set loose even recently, up to 3,600 from the national jail, of which many are murderers, convicted murderers, rapists, even some who were involved in the assassination of former President Moïse. So it is indeed an issue of national security to the Dominican Republic.
Well, you, Foreign Minister, are very well known for your very long career in the defense of human rights. And yet, as you very well know, Amnesty International, just to give one example, has just issued a press release accusing your government of de facto racism and of inhumane treatment of your neighbors, of Haitians. How do you justify, for example, the deportation of tens of thousands of undocumented Haitians that have been living here in this country when they very clearly are facing danger if they return home?
Well, let's address three issues that you've just mentioned. One is racism. That is completely false. We have a totally different history in our national independence and the way that our economy was developed and our identity, meaning we never had a plantation society in the Dominican Republic, unlike Haiti, unlike the United States, and unlike most CARICOM countries. That was never the case in the Dominican Republic. I don't want to get into the reasons why, but we can. So we developed as a really a mestizo or mulatto nation. 73% of our population is mixed blood, 16% black, 11% white. So there's never been within Dominicans a distinction as to race. That is completely false, number one. So there are no policies which you can point to that establish us as a racist country. We deport people who are illegal in the Dominican Republic, just like any other country. All countries in the neighborhood, I don't want to get into naming them, but all of them are also deporting Haitians back to their countries. Now, that does not mean that we deport everyone. We deport, there are considerable number, hundreds of thousands of Haitians in the Dominican Republic who are not bothered. But the numbers, the increasing numbers, given the situation in Haiti, is something that we cannot shoulder. We cannot shoulder the total social needs of Haiti. We have our own population, which is our basic responsibility.
Would your government not consider a humanitarian corridor, for example? We know that people in Haiti at this moment are going hungry because of this crisis. Is that not something you would consider?
Well, first of all, the border markets are open completely. There are more than 50 markets. There are four main ones, but there are over 50 other smaller markets where Haitians were not for those markets, the level of hunger in Haiti would be far greater. So thousands of Haitians come to those border markets on a weekly basis. Now, you have to understand, today, the airport is closed. The port is basically closed. So how can you get any humanitarian assistance? So, of course, we're more than willing to help with humanitarian assistance. The question is how? If you have trucks going through land, through the roads, they are controlled by the gangs. We've had sort of scores of Dominicans who have been kidnapped by the gangs in the past. So, of course, we're more than willing to help with the international community with any humanitarian assistance. But the question is being asked, why isn't the Dominican Republic shouldering the bulk of it? That is not, we can't. We're a developing country as well. Even though we're richer than Haiti, that doesn't mean that we are a rich country either.
I understand, but basically you're saying that the Haitians are on their own.
Well, unfortunately, that's precisely why we've been going to the international community, the United Nations, all of these years. We've been calling the attention of the international community. We've been crying out. It's the time now, what President Abinader said in September of 21, he shook the tree at the United Nations General Assembly. Unfortunately, that was after the assassination of President Moïse. We are not the creators of the Haitian situation. There are many actors who have a lot more at stake in this situation, not in terms of national security. We are the ones who do have the greatest at stake in that realm. But in terms of who are the actors that have a greater responsibility for the situation in Haiti, it's not the Dominican Republic. So we're willing to do our part. We have been doing our part. But the international community has not stepped up to do theirs.
I understand that the Biden administration had promised something like $300 million at least, and in fact a bit more, to help in this situation. But that money, as I understand, hasn't been distributed yet. What's happened?
The United States is an essential actor in solving part of the Haitian crisis. They have in the past, they have been an actor, and they will continue to be one. Fortunately, CARICOM has also stepped up at this point in time. But as you rightly point out, the international community has pledged, but not actually deposited yet, the funds in the Haiti Trust Fund at the United Nations. It's still lacking those funds. Hopefully, they will be coming soon so that the countries that have offered police forces to integrate the multinational security mission can go to Haiti and aid the Haitian police as soon as possible.
I understand that, but what is preventing it? What is stopping it or delaying it? Is it because the Congress is not authorizing it, or is it because they don't believe that there's anyone who they can have as an interlocutor right now in Haiti?
You would have to ask that question to the U.S. authorities directly, Lucia. I don't want to speculate as to the reasons why they've not moved any faster. I do know that they may be sort of soon, very soon, moving in that direction. But again, you have to talk to our friends in the U.S.
Well, I'm not just referring to the United States. You did mention also that there are other governments that were willing to send in a police force, a military force, in fact, to help to prop up the very, very weak police force of Haiti, whatever is left of it. But that hasn't happened either. So there must be other concerns, other reasons.
Well, the way that the multinational force has been structured by the UN Security Council is a unique method. The Haitians did not want a peacekeeping force, a UN blue helmet force, which is what the UN is accustomed to doing. Had that been a peacekeeping force, it would be there already. Why? Because the UN has the expertise, the funds would come from the UN, everything, the operations, etc. But given the fact that the Haitians did not want a peacekeeping force, and that several members of the Security Council also did not want to pay any longer for another PKO, in that case, it had to be this unique force. It requires a lot of thought as to how to set it up. This is the first time that they're doing someone is supposed to lead, but then that leading country has to reach agreements with the Haitian government, and all the other governments also reach bilateral agreements. Then you have to have a coordinating unit somewhere. Who is going to be doing that? All of those are being looked at the moment, as well as who is going to give the blessing of the legitimacy to the successive government. There are a lot of questions at stake that are very difficult to answer at the moment, and that is perhaps why it's so complex to do this transition.
I suppose one could argue that there is no government in Haiti. The prime minister is no longer there. He says he's resigned. The gangs are in charge of 80% at least of the capital and other parts of the country as well. So who is there to... As you say, your country also doesn't have an interlocutor. Is it possible to set up a stabilizing government, interim government, that has been, as I understand, in the works now for, not just now, but for the last year, without any success?
Well, let me clarify a few things. Number one, there is a government in place. Very precarious, but there is. When Prime Minister Henry left the country, he designated an interim prime minister who is still in place, and that is the finance minister, who is the acting prime minister with the Council of Ministers.
Formally.
Prime Minister Henry has not been able to return to Haiti. But he said, when he offered his resignation, he said, I will resign when the presidential transition government is installed. So he has still, formally, he has offered to resign, but he's still technically the prime minister in exile or abroad, if you will, not in exile because he's not able to return to his country, but there is a government. Now, when I said there is no interlocutor on the other side, in terms of, first of all, of who is in charge of law and order, there is no one at the border on the other side trying to establish that, and you don't know who the other person on the other side, who may be armed or not, who they are, is not easy to determine. Number one. Number two, as you said, 80% of the capital is in the control of gangs, but there's still 20% of the government still precariously there. And that is what is required for to maintain that semblance today of law, of still a government, so that they are able to hand over to the new provisional council.
I think you would agree that Haiti is living through perhaps one of its worst existential crises. What would happen if there is a, if this becomes catastrophic and millions of Haitians feel they have to flee? Where would they go?
Indeed, we think that this is the most profound existential crisis that Haiti has faced, no doubt. Everyone seems to be in agreement in contemporary terms in the last 60, 70 years, number one. Number two, in terms of a stampede of Haitians, that hasn't really occurred.
Not yet.
Up until now, well, you had, remember, an earthquake in 2010 that killed up to 300,000 people and left the capital, Port-au-Prince, in total shambles, and the country in inoperative terms.
But the whole world came to Haiti's aid, at least at the time.
Including the Dominican Republic, who were the first responders to the Haitian crisis. But then there was no stampede. There have been other hurricanes, other earthquakes, and that hasn't occurred either. So we don't expect that to be happening anytime in the immediate future. But we also, in the Dominican Republic, we have a plan in case something of that nature were to happen. It's our security forces do have a plan. We would have to have something of that sort, but we don't expect that to be the case. So, but still, that's why we are crying out for the international community to step in. It's really late in the game in order to establish some basic law and order in Haiti.
Very much so, I would say. But could I ask you, what is your plan?
Unfortunately, I don't know it because it is a plan which is privy to the security forces. I do know that it exists, but I can't go into that.
Into detail, yeah, I can imagine. But tell me, your government, your president, has said in no uncertain terms that the Dominican Republic would not allow refugee camps of Haitians, even temporary refugee camps, because of, quote, security and historic reasons. What does that mean? Especially the historic reasons. How does that weigh in?
Well, first of all, Lucia, there are only two countries in Latin America that did not achieve their independence from Spain. That is Panama and the Dominican Republic. Our independence happened from Haiti. We declared what we call an ephemeral independence in 1821. And within a month or so, Haitians occupied our side of the island as well. So we were under Haitian occupation for 22 years, from 1822 until 1844, when we declared independence. But then for the next 12 years, Haitian armies continued to invade the Dominican Republic, trying to recapture the country. So this is one of the fundamental reasons that perhaps the international community is not aware and doesn't understand this particular part of our history, that we have this fraught relationship in terms of our independence and our identity as two very needed separate entities in such a small space. So we cannot allow. When you have a country that has a very different culture, very different language, very different customs, to come into your own country in such large numbers as we already have, and use our social services, use our space to a point where frictions are created inevitably, and that would be a refugee camp. Where refugee camps, we know, look at Palestine, look at the temporary provisional refugee camps in Palestine. They have been there forever. And so that is one of the reasons why we cannot allow refugee camps in the Dominican Republic. Besides, the cost, the burden of that would be insurmountable for us. We have our own population to as a priority.
Well, everyone seems to agree on the need for very rapid stabilization, for a very rapid stabilization process in Haiti right now. And yet, over decades, I have seen, and you have seen, a vicious circle of political and security chaos in Haiti, followed by international intervention, then a new government, then the international stabilization force leaves, and then there is chaos yet again, and then there's another intervention, and this goes on and on and on. It never seems to end. What is the solution for Haiti?
For Haitians to wake up, smell the roses, the Haitian, particularly the Haitian political, business, religious, all elites, and understand that they have to get together, stick to a national plan, and really come together, because no one, you can bring in aid temporarily, but no one is going to be able to fix permanently the Haitian situation for them. Only Haitians and Haitians themselves can fix it. And this is precisely the conundrum. When will they get religion, in a way? When will they understand that it is only up to them, that they cannot be looking out to the international community, and they have to stop victimizing themselves or feeling that they have, that they're the only country in the world that has been a victim of the international community? We in the Dominican Republic, as I said, first of all, we were occupied by Haiti. We then were occupied by the United States twice. In the 20th century, in 1916, we were occupied by the United States for 8 years, just like Haiti. We were occupied by the United States in 1965. Yet, our elites have stuck together throughout it, and we have come out of this situation, and we don't feel victims of anyone. We believe very much, and we're very proud of our history, in spite of all of those terrible, we would be far more advanced in our development were it not for all of those happenings. So Haitians themselves, Haiti was more developed than the Dominican Republic up until perhaps the early 20th century, economically.
Well, you just mentioned I don't know if you're being fair. I mean, we've got the elite, which manages the country, which is responsible for the governance or the lack of governance. And then you've got a population, much of which is illiterate, starving, and being kept under the boot of successive military dictatorships and other forms of force. Right now, they are armed gangs. So what can you expect from ordinary Haitians if the elite won't step up, as you say, and smell the roses?
We had a famous dictator for 12, I don't remember exactly how many years, in the 19th century, Ulysse Zero, alias Lili, until 1899 when he was killed. Then we had Trujillo for 31 years, from 1930 to 1961. So, you know, no one can lecture us on the difficulties that we've had to face to come out of all of these situations. So every country faces they have their own particular history, their own particular needs, their particular moments of darkness, and they have to come out of it. You can't, who has a magical solution, Lucia? How can you get any country to look ahead and strive ahead and get out of the doldrums unless they themselves do it?
Well, I understand that certainly these moments of darkness that you mentioned in the case of Haiti have been very long, and I can't really remember any moments of light. But you're going again, I understand, very, very soon, or the Dominican Republic will again appeal to the Security Council later this month to do something. What is it that you expect?
To speed up the transition, hopefully, to deposit, as you said, the monies so that the multinational support mission can go to Haiti as soon as possible. Also to help in the international banks, multilateral financial banks, to they have done analysis of the Haitian situation, whether the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, the International Monetary Fund, they all have analysis and plans. But you can't do any of this. You can't put them in action until there is some semblance of law and order. That's one of the reasons why are 50%, almost 50, no, more than 50% of the Haitian population today suffering from some type of malnutrition. It's not because they cannot produce their food. It's because most of the lands are fallow. They cannot get the needed seeds, the financing, and there are no structures now that allow a normal development of the agricultural sector because of the gangs and the violence. So until this is stopped, Haiti is going, the World Food Program can help temporarily, but they can't solve hunger in Haiti by themselves.
It sounds to me that you believe, and that the international community perhaps believes, that there's nothing to be done, that they have lost faith in the possibility of change in Haiti. Am I right?
I don't. If you're asking me, I believe that the Haitians themselves, look at when they leave Haiti, how industrious and they are in the United States and everywhere they go. Basically, you know, there are problems like in any community, anywhere, but Haitians themselves are very creative. They work hard. And there is no reason why, as a nation, Haitians cannot get ahead. They have in the past. The question is getting together, deciding to do it, and doing it.
Foreign Minister Roberto Alvarez, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you so much, Lucia. Appreciate it.